So we'll be looking at Joshua 10 through 12 today. And on the top of the lesson, kind of split this up in six sections. We'll be looking at chapter 10, 1 through 27. It's going to be talking about the defeat of the five kings. And then we'll look at 28 through 43, the conquest of southern Canaan. And then in chapter 11, 1 through 15, we're going to see the conquest of northern Canaan. And then verses 16 through 23 of chapter 11 is the summary of this entire campaign. Then we get into chapter 12. And verses 1 through 6, it's talking about the kings that were defeated by Moses and the sons of Israel, and we'll say more about that when we get to that little section. And then ending in chapter 12, verses 7 through 24, we will talk about the kings that were defeated by Joshua and the sons of Israel. So that's kind of a breakdown of the three chapters here that we're going to look at. So we're going to start in chapter 10, and it talks about the defeat, like we just said, of these five Amorite kings who united against Gibeon. And the conquest, we'll also see this conquest, like we said, in southern Canaan. This is also going to be in chapter 10. But starting off about these five kings. Before we get into that, let's remember in our last class what we were discussing in chapters 8 through 9. You know, especially chapter 9, you know, we were talking about, let's jump over there for a second. When you had the first two verses, and then you had the following verses, 3 and to the end of the chapter. And one thing that we kind of made note of, even though you just had this brief little section about verses 1 and 2, and then you jump into 3, a whole different idea, but we also took notice that although these were talking about two different things, it kind of was based off of one thing, and that's because of what they've been hearing. You know, they've been hearing about Joshua and the sons of Israel and their God. So, and then we saw because of that what happened in the first two verses, what that caused with these people, but then we saw a different idea of what that caused with the inhabitants of Gibeon starting in verse 3. But they were both based on what they have heard, these things that is being known all around. Everyone is hearing of what's taking place. So we saw that, and then so those verses 3 on is talking about the inhabitants of Gibeon. And then once we get into chapter 10, we're going to see some more things concerning that. Now, in the previous chapter, it explained some of their deception and what they did in order to have this agreement with Joshua. But then in chapter 10, we see kind of a result, if you will, of that. So let's start by looking at chapter 10, 1 through 27. We're going to look at these, what it's talking about. These start off with these five kings. I put on the lesson who initiated or pursued this unity, these with these five kings. Which king was that? Yeah, I feel your pain. Yeah, Adonizedek, or however you say that. So he was the king of Jerusalem. And so why in this case well, I say in this case, but why or based on what, and I might not have been clear in what I'm looking for, but why or based on what, why was he trying to have these other kings unite with him? What was it based on? And it's okay, so kind of same idea. So he heard verse 1. So it had to do with these things that he heard. We'll read verse 1. It said, "Now it came about when Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had captured Ai and had utterly destroyed it, just as he had done with Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and that the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were within their land." So, we see number one, well, let's say it this way. Two things he heard. So, what are they? What's the first thing that we noticed that this king heard? Okay, so he heard about what happened in Ai and what Joshua had done, that they had captured Ai and utterly destroyed it, and just as was done with Jericho and its king. So again, we see this idea. People are hearing these things. So what was the second thing, though? There was something else that was mentioned in here. I heard somebody who? Oh, Gibeonites. Yes. He also heard about the inhabitants of Gibeon and that they had made peace with Israel and that they were living in their land. So, two things he heard. Now, when he heard these things, what we're going to look at following this is sort of his reaction, or based on this, if you will. Now, I put on there, why did he fear greatly, according to verse 2? Okay, so Gibeon was a great city. Good point. Yeah, because that's one of the things that's kind of brought out in this. So we see, now obviously, the king, had reason to fear Joshua. And he had reason to fear the sons of Israel, and definitely had reason to fear God. But I think something else is in mind here, kind of like what Don just brought up. Because that's not where you really see the emphasis. Verse 2 says that he feared greatly because Gibeon, because it was a great city, like mentioned. It was greater than Ai, which Joshua had already destroyed. And its men, Gibeon's men, it said that they were mighty. And so now think about it. This fear wasn't because the city was strong or defeated by Israel, because they didn't battle them. That wasn't the focus here. If they had battled Gibeon and Gibeon lost, then that would show something about Israel's strength in that way that might give them a reason for that statement. But that wasn't what took place. That's, they didn't battle at all. So that's why I'm leaning towards what Don was saying. Consider it this way. Yes, Gibeon, that city was strong. its men were mighty, and they made peace. They made peace with Israel and Joshua, the sons of Israel. So if a land or a people this strong and this mighty, they see something in what they hear. I mean, because these aren't rumors. People know what's happening. It's proven. So they hear these things, and this drove them to a fear that said, hey, we need to make peace with Israel. And then we have what we looked at in chapter 9, their deception. But that was their reasoning. So, you know, that is the fear, or that is what drove Gibeon, was this fear. And so the fear that is spoken of here with this king of Jerusalem, I believe the fear he's talking of is the fear of what other nations or other cities might do. Would other cities hear these things and do the same? Now, we know, especially after this, it wouldn't be that easy for them to deceive Joshua again. But I believe that's what's taking place here. They are trying to set fear in others so that they would not do the same. So according to verse 4, why does the king of Jerusalem want help from the other kings? And we kind of already spoke about it. It's because they had made peace. Because Gibeon had made peace with Joshua and the sons of Israel. And they're wanting to band together, or that's what he's wanting them to do. Band together to do this because Gibeon made peace with their enemy. Now, was it just because they made peace with their enemy? It could be, but I, like I said, I think there was more to it than just that. So definitely, yeah, they weren't pleased that they made peace with their enemy, but again, I think it was also to set fear in others that they would not try to do the same. This was so that they would have an example of what is going to take place. These kings banding together against those that would make peace with Israel. And that would definitely be something for others to think about before they tried to make peace. Now, it would have been more helpful if they were successful, but I'm getting ahead of myself there. They weren't successful in this, but anyway, we'll have more to say about that in a minute. So, who are the five kings I put on there? So, we already recognized that we had Adoni-Zedek. He was the king of Jerusalem. What was one of the other kings? Moab? King of Hebron? Okay. Okay, and that was Piram? Okay. And then we had Japhia? Okay. Okay. That's right. So that was the five kings. These are ones that they united together. So that they could battle. Even though it was five against one, Israel defeated them. And how is that? I mean, aren't those odds? Okay, it was God's will. So it was more than just this. Again, when we're talking about these things that are going on, these different examples of the different battles, you know, we've had examples of how they would take lands in an unconventional way. It wasn't your normal battle. Your normal battle with Jericho. You know, these different things that would happen, and how they failed the first time at Ai, but then not the second time. And all of these, it's because has to do with God. Okay, they failed at Ai because he wasn't with them at the time because of Achan's sin. But then, when he was with them, then they were successful. And we've seen that terminology all throughout, this idea of being successful. And again, that is how Israel is going to win. It's because God is on their side. And if they're faithful in doing what he says, then they will be successful. Let's look at 10:8. He says that the Lord says, do not fear them. So why is that? Do not fear them. So let me tell you. It says four. So we're about to get some explanation. I have given them into your hands. Not one of them will stand before you. And then it states several times in the section that the Lord slew them with a great slaughter. We see that several times in this section. But some of the verses bring some more detail as well. And that's some of the other verses that I had listed on here. Because we had 10:8, 10:11, 10:14, and 10:15. Now in 10:11, it says, the Lord threw large stones from heaven on them. So this is something that the Lord did. He threw these large stones from heaven on him. And they died. And then further along in there, it made this statement towards the end of the verse. There were more who died from the hailstones than those whom the sons of Israel killed with the sword. So that tells you how much death occurred by these stones that the Lord threw. So this hailstorm or hailstone took more lives than the swords of the sons of Israel. Then again, in 10:14, in the latter part, it says, for the Lord fought for Israel. The Lord fought for Israel. Then we go down to verse 25. Joshua then said to them, do not fear or be dismayed. Be strong and courageous, for thus the Lord will do to all your enemies with whom you fight. So the Lord did this to their enemies. We see his action in here. We see what he allowed for them to accomplish. The Lord was with them, and that is why they are successful. So now we'll go into verses 28 and following. If are there any comments or thoughts or anything on this first section? Okay. So in verses 28 and following, we see them start to capturing the land in this section. So how many cities are listed as conquered in this section from 28 through 39? I heard something. One more. Seven. Well, and and some of the confusion, did y'all start in 28? Okay. We'll look at it. We'll look at it. But I want to make a note as well, too, because in your Bible, they might have divided this. Your 28 might have been part of your section before here. But 28 starts talking about some of this, and then you go all the way down. So, started in verse 28. So, we have Makkadah, right? So, that's one. Then 29, we have Libna. Now, y'all watch me make sure I counted right. 31 is Lachish or Lashes, however you say that. So that's three. 33, Horem. Is that one maybe y'all didn't count? Okay. Because that's where it says, then Horem, king of Gezer, came up and helped Lachish. And Joshua defeated him and his people. So that's four. Then you have 34 is Eglon. 36, you got Hebron. And then in 38, you have Deborah. So I'm coming up with seven. So we've got seven cities that are listed. We all good there? Okay. So we have seven listed there. And we also see this reoccurring phrase in this section here in verses 28 through 40. You're going to see this reoccurring phrase. Let's start in 28. We're not going to read all the verses. I'm just going to pick out the phrases. So 28, it says, utterly destroyed it and every person who was in it. 30, he struck it and every person who was in it with the edge of the sword. He left no survivor in it. 32, struck it and every person who was in it with the edge of the sword. 33, until he had left him no survivor. So we're seeing this reoccurring thing over and over. 35, he utterly destroyed that day every person who was in it. 37, he left no survivor. He utterly destroyed it, every person who was in it. 39, they struck them with the edge of the sword and utterly destroyed every person who was in it. He left no survivor. And then verse 40, again, we see the same idea. He left no survivor. He utterly destroyed all who breathed. And we'll see this in the next sections as well. So we see this idea that he left no survivor, that they were utterly destroyed. So what right did Joshua have? Because this sounds terrible, right? What right did Joshua have to kill men, women, and children in these cities? Okay, it was God's will. That's right. You know, a lot of the times in battle, you might see just the idea that the soldiers, but we see here, you know, that they were to, Joshua and the sons of Israel were to destroy everybody. And like Sally said, it's because God commanded it. It was God's will for this. So Joshua, on his own, would not have that right. But he wasn't acting on his own. He was acting upon the will of God. He was doing what he was commanded to do. And he was. We say, what right does he have? The right that God gave him, delegated authority. And that's what he was acting upon. So that's the right that he had, but it was not his own right. He was not acting on his own. he was doing as he was commanded. So let's read verse 40. Well, we don't need to. We saw that when we looked at that he left no survivor. Everybody was destroyed. And then it ends saying, just as the Lord, the God of Israel, had commanded. So we get this idea. This is what was commanded. So we see that this was God's plan. This is what God wanted Joshua to do. Why might that be? What would the importance of destroying everyone of that city? Because there's an importance behind that. What is that? Go ahead. Okay. Right, so that's removing the influence because of idolatry and other things. That way, you know, you're not corrupting them. And at this point, that's what was being done. So to remove this influence, and so that they would not be corrupted by living with others. And are there any other thoughts or comments towards that? Yes. 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 Good point. You're exactly right, John. And we'll see. They're still going to continue to have problems. It's just their history, like you said. They definitely have problems on not being influenced by others and doing what they should be doing. So that's why we see this here, though. That was to remove that from. Did you have a question? Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I thought I said hand. So that's to remove that influence. Correct. Yes, sir.
A lot of the victim laws had to do with stoning, putting to death someone who was in, violation of God's law. So, this seems very serious what was happening. They were wiping out, these cities. But that similar thing was commanded to do to people who were in violation of God's law, even within Israel. God's harsh towards these cities. God's harsh even towards his own people. Mm-hmm. Violation.
But it all drawn to one thing. He expects obedience. Huh? Exactly. So we see this in the case here. That's to remove these influences. But like Josh said, because God wants people to be obedient. So this here is going to remove that influence and to hopefully help with that, which we will see in their history. There's still some issues there, but
it reminds me of the New Testament concept, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. That's kind of a running theme is... Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. Good points, Josh. Anybody else? Okay. We'll go over to chapter 11. This next section. The overview of the whole chapter, we're going to see that it talks about this conquest of northern Canaan, and the overall view or review of the chapter, or conquest. So this overall view of the conquest. In 11, 1 through 15, is where we're going to talk about this conquest of the northern Canaan. And we start off in this section again, this reoccurring theme. I put on there, why did Jabin, king of Hazor, send word to these other kings? Because he had heard. So we're seeing this over and over and over. You know, these battles are going on. Israel is defeating these other cities, utterly defeating these other cities. And others are hearing about this. Word is getting out. And like we said, this isn't rumors getting out. They know that this is taking place. So word is getting out what is going on. And when he heard about what happened, that's Jabin, what happened in southern Canaan. Let's go to verse 42. Or I say 42, I meant 42 of the previous chapter. So we know how Joshua 10 ended. Joshua 10 ended at verse 42. It says, and Joshua captured all these kings and all their lands at one time because the Lord, the God of Israel, fought for Israel. So basically that's ending, statement ending in Joshua 10. And then you get over to where we're at, the beginning of 11. And it says, then it came about when Jabin, king of Hazor, heard of it. Now, I realize of it is in italics, but I believe that's correct. That's what it's talking about. It's talking about what we just looked at in chapter 10. When he heard of what was going on, when he heard about these battles. So then, he sent to Jobab, king of Madon, and to the king of Shimron, and to the king of Asheph. This is his reaction when he heard. So he's getting a hold of these other kings. And he's doing this so that they can gather together. Verse 4, and they came out, they and all their armies with them, as many people as the sand that is on the seashore, with very many horses and chariots. So all the kings, having agreed to meet, came and encamped together at the waters of Merom to fight against Israel. So they agree, and they all gather together. And in verse 4 says, you know, and this just wasn't a little bit of people. The way it states it, it says that, you know, there was these kings and all their armies, as many people as the sand that is on the seashore. That's trying to emphasize a lot. Okay, there's a lot of soldiers being emphasized here in verse 4. But verse 6, the Lord tells Joshua, he said, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid because of them. And then he says 4. He explains why. Tomorrow, at this time, I will deliver all of them slain before Israel. So the Lord tells Joshua, don't be afraid, because you're going to be successful. The Lord is with them on this. Even though they are outnumbered, even though, like we looked at, 5-1 on the other kings, again, you see this idea of being outnumbered, but which in normal battles would be a factor. But again, in these, it is no factor. It doesn't matter how many people they had, because the Lord is with them and they're going to be successful. Verse 8 said, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Israel so that they defeated them. And again, we see this idea that they struck them until no survivor was left to them. And then in verse 11, they struck them, every person, and utterly destroying them. There was no one left who breathed. So again, we see that they were to totally destroy them. And we see that they are conquering these lands. And then verse 15, let's note a statement that we're seeing in verse 15. It says, just as the Lord had commanded Moses, his servant, so Moses commanded Joshua. And so Joshua did. He left nothing undone of all that the Lord had commanded Moses. So this was the plan. And then verse 16, thus Joshua took all that land. So we see that they're being defeated. Verse 18, we see that Joshua waged war, it says, a long time with all these kings. And then in 19, there was not a city which made peace with the sons of Israel's, except the Hivites living in Gibeon, which we talked about them. It says, besides them, they took them all in battle. They took all of them in battle. And then verse 23. So Joshua took the whole land, according to all that the Lord had spoken to Moses, and Joshua gave it for an inheritance to Israel, according to the divisions by their tribes. Thus the land had rest from war. So in this section, we see that they had taken all this land. Now, we didn't talk much about 16 through 23. And it was, like we said, that's kind of a summary of the entire campaign. And also we saw, or if you read the chapters, we had the short section. Not going to speak a lot about it, but we have the short section talked about the Anakim. And we know, if and looking in other places, these were giants, or these large people. So we see that mentioned here. But also we see something in verse 20. And I think we'll have to just, well, let's see how far we can get on that. In verse 20. Verse 20 says, for it was of the Lord to harden their hearts, to meet Israel in battle, in order that he might utterly destroy them, that they might receive no mercy, but that he might destroy them, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Verse So we see that what is taking place here, God was using Israel to bring judgment on them, on all these lands, and thus used the stubbornness and the unbelief of these people to bring about their destruction. Now, there's some other verses I put on there that you can note. Due to time, we're not going to look at all of that, but we had examples in Exodus, and you know, and that's having to do with this idea of harden their heart. God didn't actually put something in their heart. What it is he did things that caused a reaction that he knew that they would do. Because this is based on how these people's heart is already, how they would already react. And you can look at some of those examples in Exodus that show and explain some of that. And then Genesis 15, 16, and Deuteronomy 9 through 4, you see that this is what the Lord had planned. He was using Israel to do. So that will help explain some of that. And I have about 1 minute. We're going to finish this section. So section 5 and 6, not a whole lot in there. I mean, there was, but chapter 12 is more of a recap or a list of the defeated kings. And in 12, 1 through 6, you see where Moses and the sons of Israel talk about these lands that were east of the Jordan, these lands that were taken, Sihon and Og, because I put on there which kings were conquered. So Sihon, king of Amorites, who lived in Heshbon. And then verse 4 says Og, king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and Edrei. And then you had verse 6 says Moses, the servant of the Lord, and the sons of Israel defeated them. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave it to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh as a possession. And then the little section behind that, verses 7 through 24, it just lists all these kings that were defeated. These were kings that were defeated, verse 7. Now, these are kings of the land whom Joshua and the sons of Israel defeated beyond the Jordan towards the west, from Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon, even as far as Mount Halak, which rises towards Seir. And Joshua gave it to the tribes of Israel as a possession according to their divisions. And then it starts naming off all of these. And posed a question, how many kings were there? I'm almost there. How many kings were there? There were 31 listed. And verse 24b says, in all, 31 kings. And we finished this section. Next class, we will do sections. There's papers back there that will be for 13 through 21. So if you don't have that, please pick that up. Thank you for all your comments. And thank you for...